Psalm 104, starting in verse 1, Bless the Lord, O my soul. O Lord my God, thou art very great. Thou art clothed with honor and majesty, who coverest thyself with light as with a garment, who stretcheth out the heavens like a curtain, who layeth the beams of his chambers in the waters, who maketh the clouds his chariot, who walketh upon the wings of the wind, who maketh his angels spirits, his ministers a flaming fire, who laid the foundations of the earth, that it should not be removed forever. Thou coverest it with the deep as with a garment. The waters stood above the mountains. At thy rebuke they fled. At the voice of thy thunder they hasted away. They go up by the mountains. They go down by the valleys unto the place which thou hast founded for them. Thou hast set a bound that they may not pass over, that they turn not again to cover the earth. He sendeth the springs into the valleys which run among the hills. They give drink to every beast of the field. The wild asses quench their thirst. By them shall the fowls of the heaven have their habitation, which sing among the branches. He watereth the hills from his chambers. The earth is satisfied with the fruit of thy works. He causeth the grass to grow for the cattle, and herb for the service of man, that he may bring forth food out of the earth, and wine that maketh glad the heart of man, and oil to make his face to shine, and bread which strengtheneth man's heart. The trees of the Lord are full of sap, the cedars of Lebanon which he hath planted, where the birds make their nests. As for the stork, the fir trees are her house. The high hills are a refuge for the wild goats, and the rocks for the conies. He appointed the moon for seasons. The sun knoweth his going down. Thou makest darkness, and it is night, wherein all the beasts of the forest do creep forth. The young lions roar after their prey, and seek their meat from God. The sun ariseth. They gather themselves together, and lay them down in their dens. Man goeth forth unto his work, and to his labor until the evening. O Lord, how manifold are thy works! In wisdom hast thou made them all. The earth is full of thy riches. So is this great and wide sea, wherein are things creeping, innumerable, both small and great beasts. There go the ships, there is that Leviathan, whom thou hast made to play therein. These wait all upon thee, that thou mayest give them their meat in due season. That thou givest them, they gather. Thou openest thine hand, they are filled with good. Thou hidest thy face, they are troubled. Thou takest away their breath, they die and return to their dust. Thou sendest forth thy spirit, they are created, and thou renewest the face of the earth. The glory of the Lord shall endure forever. The Lord shall rejoice in his works. Verse 24 again, O Lord, how manifold are thy works! In wisdom hast thou made them all. The earth is full of thy riches. Preach this morning on the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. The psalmist said that the works of God are manifold. That word manifold in the Hebrew means to multiply by the myriad, tens of thousands. There is a derivative of this word meaning abundance or many or million. Also, a word is derived from this to show the accumulation of raindrops in a rainstorm, a number that you cannot measure. The writer of Psalm 104 said that the Lord had made all his works in wisdom, and that the earth is full of God's riches. I want us to consider the wisdom and richness of God's creation this morning, and then how it all impacts you and me. Romans 11:33 says, Oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God, how unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. Isaiah tells us that the heavens, as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are God's thoughts and God's ways so much higher than man's thoughts and man's ways. Truly, there are many things about creation and God's handiwork that we will never discover and never know this side of eternity. This morning, we will only scratch the surface of the majesty of creation. There are approximately 12,000 known species of birds. Approximately 12,000. Evolutionists teach that birds evolved from reptiles. Can you honestly believe that scales turned into feathers? And that solid bones became hollow to make flight possible. Birds' bones are filled with a spongy network which fills with air as it breathes. There are air cavities in the bones connected to the bird's lungs. And yet no strength is sacrificed for the light hollow bones. They're stiffened with ridges that resemble advanced engineering techniques. They tell us that the braces within the bones of a vulture's wings are almost identical, geometrically speaking, with those of the Warren truss, commonly used in steel structure. John Storer, writing in the Scientific American, says that a bird flies by the same aerodynamic principle as an airplane. He wrote, and I quote, It uses much of the same mechanical equipment. wings, propellers, steering gear, even slots and flaps for help in takeoffs and landings. Astonishing as it may seem, every bird has a pair of propellers. They can be seen in action best in a slow-motion picture of a bird in flight. During the downward beat of the wings, the primary feathers at the wingtips stand out at right angles to the rest of the wing and to the line of flight. These feathers are the propellers. They take on this twisted form for only a split second during each wing beat. Throughout the entire wing beat, they are constantly changing their shape, adjusting automatically to air pressure and the changing requirement of the wing as it moves up and down. Now, Dr. Storer states that the feathers are adjusting automatically. Name one thing that adjusts automatically that was not designed by a designer. We have a lot of modern conveniences, many appliances and tools and engines, etc., that adjust automatically. From furnaces to air conditioners to carburetors to toasters, various kinds of sensors and on, but not one of them is the product of chance. They were all designed, skillfully designed by a designer. Nor is it a product of chance that the bird's wings are self-adjusting, as though controlled by a computer that reacts in the thousandth part of a second. They were made by Almighty God. Peregrine falcon can dive at speeds exceeding 210 miles per hour, yet it remains under perfect control. Its eyes are kept in perfect focus as the distance rapidly narrows. There's a third eyelid which is drawn back and forth across the eyeball like a windshield wiper, which keeps the eye free of dust and other irritants, which would be a problem at 210 miles an hour, obviously. God gave the falcon an eyesight so keen that he can detect a pigeon at a range of over 5 miles. No less ingenious is a bird's beak, which is perfectly designed for its food needs. Birds that live on tough-shelled nuts have heavy beaks capable of crushing rigid shells. Birds that, like hawks and owls and eagles, they have hooked beaks which permit them to tear apart their prey. Scavengers, like vultures, also have hooked bills, but these are softer because the flesh of longer dead animals tears off much easier than that of fresh killed ones. Birds, depending on grubs and insects that live in the trees, have long, straight beaks designed for boring. Geese and ducks have spoon bills suitable for foraging food from the bottoms of lakes and oceans and ponds. Now, did all this happen over millions of years? If so, then how did these birds survive while this process was taking place? An eagle with a duck bill or a duck with an eagle beak doesn't have millions of years for things to evolve and work out okay. He has to eat today. And how did birds learn to make nests? Who taught them if not God? The tailor bird sews large leaves together with fibers when building its nest, using its beak for a needle. The chimney swift builds nests of twigs by pasting them to the inside of a hollow tree or an unused chimney. The glue is manufactured in its mouth. How did that evolve? Baltimore eagle, by means of thousands of shuttle-like movements of its bill, makes stitches and knots and loops. They tell us that its nest is so well made that it can hang for years in a tree. Through the wind and through the rain and through the snow, it can hang for years without becoming dislodged. The largest nest on record is 9.5 feet wide and 20 feet deep, and weighed more than 6,700 pounds for a pair of hummingbirds. No, it was built... They wanted a lot of room. It was built by a pair of bald eagles near St. Petersburg, Florida. But God has given us an unbelievable diversity and variety just in the area of birds. Consider the emperor penguin of the Antarctic, which can dive to depths of over 800 feet. Or the sooty tern, which remains continuously aloft for 3 or 4 years at a time without ever one time landing. Or the horned sungem bird of South America, which has a wing beat of up to 90 times per second. Consider the bee hummingbird, which full grown weighs 56/1,000th of an ounce. Consider the ostrich. You know, when God was talking with Job and he was showing him the majesty of his own creation and showing him the mortality and weakness of man. In Job chapter 39, verse 13, he says, "Gavest thou the goodly wings unto the peacocks?" He said, "Job, did you do it? Job, have you made the peacock?" He said, "Or wings and feathers unto the ostrich, which leaveth her eggs in the earth and warmeth them in dust and forgetteth that the foot may crush them or that the wild beast may break them. She is hardened against her young ones as though they were not hers. Her labor is in vain without fear, Because God hath deprived her of wisdom, neither hath he imparted to her understanding. Now, God gave tremendous intelligence to many creatures, but he said, I've deprived the ostrich of wisdom. He said, I haven't even given her enough wisdom to know that she needs to take care of her eggs and protect them. She forgetteth that the foot may crush them. He said, I didn't give her that much intelligence. So you know what God did to make up for it? The shell of the ostrich egg, even though only 1/16 of an inch thick, they tell us will support the weight of a 280-pound man standing on it. And it's only 1/16 of an inch thick. How do you account for the incredible navigational abilities of birds? Without compass or map, they make incredibly long trips that they have never made before. A golden plover flies from Canada to South America without stopping. The wheat ear travels every year from Africa to Greenland on a fixed schedule without a calendar. The black pole warbler nests in Canada, then wings its way 4,000 miles to Brazil. Much of the traveling is done at night and over vast stretches of water and wilderness. Who tells these birds how and where and when to go? It's not just the swallows that return to Capistrano or the carrier pigeon that has an unbelievable sense of direction. God has given many species of birds an inherent navigational system that defies logic and defies understanding. It's not something that evolved, something that got stronger and better over time. The wheat ear bird had to develop the ability to travel all the way from Africa to Greenland. If the strength, the navigational talent took millions of years or even thousands of years or hundreds of years, then the wheat ear birds would have all drowned in the Atlantic Ocean before the evolutionary process was complete. After all, by the evolutionist's own thought processes, needed organs and limbs and abilities are acquired through effort and practice and necessity and tremendous amounts of time. How do you practice going from Africa to Greenland? If you can fly 1/4 of the way, you drown. If you can fly 1/2 of the way, you drown. If you can fly 3/4 of the way, good for you, you still drown. That ability within that little bird was placed there by Almighty God. That's why David said, the Lord has made all his works in wisdom. God did it. The evolutionist likes to talk about the missing link. But the truth of the matter is, there are a million missing links. And they'll forever remain missing because they don't exist. There are 1,000 questions that the evolutionist cannot answer because he doesn't know the truth. And all of the wonderful detail and variety and beauty and ingenuity that has been given just to birds alone, he cannot account for, except to say that it evolved. Romans 1:22 says, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And for all of his learning and for all of his degrees and all of his doctorates and all of his education and all of his research, he professes to be wise, but God says he's a fool. For the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. And when you start with the premise that there is no God, and you have to look around and you have to explain everything we see, that it's due to the process of evolution, and you have to make excuses and allowances and guess and surmise and suppose, and you become a fool. The sapsucker drills little holes into tree trunks and then makes itself scarce. The sap that oozes from the holes attracts insects. And then the sapsucker returns and eats them. It's the sapsucker's own little trap line. God taught him. The typical hammer rate of a woodpecker is 900 times per minute, or 15 times a second. Several years ago, a team of engineers was contracted to design the perfect crash helmet, a helmet that would absorb the greatest impact with the least amount of discomfort or harm. After thousands of man hours and tens of thousands of research dollars, they came up with what they dubbed the perfect crash helmet. They thought that they were the first ones to design such a thing. But then someone showed them that their crash helmet was almost identical to the skull of a woodpecker. Long ago, God had designed the perfect crash helmet. They tell us that when the woodpecker's head snaps back after pecking the tree, the brain is subject to a deceleration of about 10 G-force. God made provision for even the little woodpecker. Crocodiles, because they spend so much time in rivers, face a problem with leeches. Leeches come inside the crocodile's mouth and fasten themselves to his gums and tongue and side of his mouth and begin to suck his blood, just so you won't be in a hurry for lunch. They stick so tightly that the crocodile cannot get them off. It would be a very serious problem, except that God created a bird called the black-backed courser, better known as a crocodile bird. It's a beautiful bird, almost the size of a chicken. It has a short, sharp-pointed bill and a wide black stripe down its back. And as the crocodile flings itself on the bank beside the river, the black-backed courser flies up and lands right in front of him. The crocodile opens his mouth wide, and the courser hops inside and lands on his tongue. He then begins picking the leeches one by one from the crocodile's mouth. When he's full, hops back out, crocodile closes its mouth until the next black-backed courser comes along. The crocodile never eats the crocodile bird because he understands the tremendous, potentially life-saving favor that little bird is doing for him. And the crocodile is a threat to just about any creature that moves. And almost all birds have many, many natural enemies. But God has placed within that crocodile and within that black-backed courser the innate knowledge that they need each other. God gave them that knowledge. Who taught the turtle dove how to act, if not God? An animal or a human comes near a turtle dove nest that has eggs in it or young in it. The mother turtle dove immediately fakes a broken wing. She flutters a few feet and then crashes to the ground. The animal or the human rushes toward her. She flutters a few more feet and then crashes to the ground. One wing extended awkwardly as if it's broken. She'll do that over and over and over again and lead the predator a long, long ways from her young. Walter Wilson says that when he was a little boy, he came across a turtle dove's nest in an apple orchard with two eggs in it. He said he was only going to take one of the eggs. He had a collection of birds' eggs, and he wanted one of the eggs. But then the mother turtle dove did exactly as I've described and led him all the way through that orchard, which was rather large, to the other side, to a road. So once she got him there, she flew off, healthy as can be. He thought, well, that does it. I'm going to take both of her eggs now. He said, but the orchard was large, and he searched and searched and searched, and he could never find her nest again. How does she know to do that? The earth is full of God's riches. Those of you that were raised on a farm know that a chicken can sit on a rod or a roost and sleep soundly all night long without falling off their perch. Lest you think that's nothing, try it sometimes. Suspend a stick a few feet high, perch on that thing. See how much sleep you get. See how good you feel in the morning. Chicken has four toes on each foot, three in front and one in back. Muscle from the front three toes goes to the middle of the foot where it meets the muscle from the back toe, and they converge to form one large muscle that goes up the front of the bird's leg and across the knee to spread out across the thigh. So that when the chicken sits, it bends its knee, it pulls that muscle tight. When it pulls that muscle tight, it automatically closes its toes. Causes the toes to close up. When it stands up, the muscles are loose and the toes open. The chicken literally can't open its foot unless it stands up. So it can sleep all night with no problem. And all birds that eat only grain and insects, such as the chicken, the red bird, black bird, canary, the robin, they all have these kind of feet and legs. But wild birds that eat meat are not like this. The eagle, the hawk, the owl, they have claws that they can close when their legs are stretched out at full length. God made them that way so that they can pick up the little animals that they catch for food and hold them away from their bodies. If they had to pull up their legs to close their toes, then the field mouse or the wild hare or whatever they've caught could scratch and claw the bird. God made everything just right. Genesis 1:21 says, "And God created great whales and every living creature that moveth, which the waters brought forth abundantly after their kind, and every winged fowl after his kind. And God saw that it was good." Consider the detail and planning that went into just the hen's egg. The white part of the egg is attached to the shell and helps to hold the yolk in the right position. The bottom part of the yolk is heavier than the top part so that it makes it float right side up just like a little boat. So, well, why is that important? The top of the yolk is where the baby chicken will grow and has to be near the mother chicken as she sits on the egg so that it will stay warm. If the yolk could get turned over and be near the bottom of the egg, it would not get the warmth that it needs to grow. It would not get the warmth that it needs to develop. As a baby chick grows, its nose is in an air chamber at the large end of the egg. The chick starts to breathe just 2 days before it is born. There's exactly enough air in that little chamber to keep the baby breathing for just 2 days. Then when the baby chick takes its last breath of air, and there is none left in the little pocket, it gives a little gasp and jerks its head. This cracks the shell, lets air in, and before long, the little chick hacks its way free. The large end of the egg where the The head of the chick always grows, has a much softer shell than the small end. If God didn't cause the chicks to grow with their head at the large end of the egg, they wouldn't be able to peck their way out. They wouldn't be able to crack the shell. God has made everything just right. He has made a perfect world. We have looked only at birds this morning, and only at a few species. There are still some 11,980 species we haven't even discussed. We haven't talked about the singing, or the plumage, or the camouflage, or the hunting and fishing techniques, and all the vast wonders of creation, just in the area of birds alone. The tremendous majesty and the tremendous amount of design and ingenuity and creativity that went in just in designing birds. When I first started working on this message, I seriously had planned on dealing not only with birds, but with insects and mammals and fish and plants and reptiles and outer space, and then with man as well. Needless to say, we're not going to get to all that this morning. So this may end up being another one of those three-part, six-month series. You never know. But just from birds alone, just from birds alone, without getting into all of the other wonders of creation and all of the other areas, just from birds alone, we can see tremendous design and learn some important truths this morning.